appropriate for what is coming next. If you listen to the U2 special live from Dublin on Saturday, then you'll know that we had a few problems in the technical department due in no small part to the studio desk actually exploding as we just went on air. And U2 kindly stayed around afterwards. In fact, they were insisting they wanted to do a bit more of a chat. And this is basically what you should have heard between 12:30 and 1 o'clock. But before I spoke to them, I asked the engineer in charge to explain what had happened, basically just to get Steve Collins and his energy drink just out of trouble. So here's his excuse anyway.
When your chief approached us and said we're going to do this interview around the world, and we said, oh yeah, I mean, obviously it's you two, the biggest Irish band in Ireland, of course we'll assist you in every way possible. So very stupidly, very naively, we said, oh, no problem, we'll provide you with the equipment and assist you. And so we set it all up, and our couple of engineer guys were down here, and our desk, the most expensive and some of the best equipment you can buy, it just stopped functioning. And we'd done all the tests before, we checked all the circuits, and it just stopped working as soon as you went on air.
Do you feel embarrassed about this at this stage?
Embarrassed?
Guilty?
No. Guilty. Oh, yeah, I'm just the whipping boy here. So, no, I'm afraid it's just one of those things. And if you do live radio, it's a problem. And it's a bit embarrassing for us because we'd obviously like, as the national broadcaster,
oh,
this is very
go,
important.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, actually, my...
Thank your mother and get on with it.
It was a very noisy affair because we were having like a 14 gale around us as well.
Yeah,
so
well,
pretty noisy, windy.
We're down here actually by the side of the Liffey, and we're overlooking one of the old canal basins here, just on the edge of the Liffey, and one of the windows is open, so you get this sound a bit like we're on an ocean liner here. So I was listening to it downstairs, and...
So there you go, listeners.
That's
if you're listening on Saturday night, it's all been explained, and we're going to try and carry on and do a bit more of an interview here. Hopefully this will be even better than the real thing then. So we still have you two with us at the moment. And we didn't really have very much time to talk about the tour that is kicking off. I mean, how long does it take, this tour, Larry?
I think it's, at the moment, it's about a year and a half.
Right. That's and does that fill you with dread?
I think it's, you know, you finish the record, get ready for the tour. It's part of the process. This is what we had planned to do. I'm kind of looking forward to getting out and playing, and we're going to be going to some places we haven't been before.
Where are you looking forward to playing most?
Actually,
Edge,
Sarajevo,
this is.
I think. Sarajevo will be, because that's something very personal. It's just actually making it finally to somewhere we've been trying to get to really since our first contact, which was in the middle of the Zoo TV tour. Bono wants to interject.
I was getting a bit worried about Bono, actually, because he's on heavy medication at the moment. He's kind of looking like he's about to
really
slumber or fall into his vodka at this moment.
I like this one.
Try to explain your medical condition at the moment.
I don't know. I don't know where I am. I don't know what planet I'm on.
You're getting more spacey as the day's progressing.
I'll say, it turns out I'm allergic to aspirin and wine. And there's one of them I can live without. I've come up, like, I've just been in the ring with Steve Collins or Prince Nassim. I just kind of look a bit...
Puffy?
Swollen. My head is even bigger than... starts out, and so they've given me a shot in the arse of some potion and a lot of pills, and actually I'm feeling great.
Your eyes are actually meeting in the center of your head. It's very scary.
No. That's the effect you have on me, Joe.
So going to your families then, Bono.
That's well known.
Don't you miss your family when you're out on tour? Quite a percentage of you have got kids here.
Absolutely.
And that must be very, very difficult.
When we finish the tour.
Moving swiftly along.
Edge, family man then.
I mean, it is one of the weird things about being in a rock and roll band and going on the road is that you know, it's great fun to be with your mates and go tearing around the world, but
sleeping with them is a different thing.
Yeah, that is pretty tough. Yeah, it is tough actually to leave.
French kissing that moustache is just, it's not going to work for me.
I'll tell you.
It's going to have to come off.
Do you know what I mean? We had to get him a guitar sound to go with his moustache.
And the shirt as well.
It's a wine bar look, and I'm telling you, everyone's going to be into it next year. He looks like a bouncer at some Cuban nightclub.
Larry's resisting the facial hair though.
Larry says that he's at a higher stage of evolution. That's why he has no hair.
No hair,
but
chest.
I reckon he shaves.
Shave, God! You're totally hairless.
I am totally hairless here, but it's not from shaving.
Gesticulates from his chest.
Not a pube insight. But back to the geography. Where are we playing? Sarajevo, the Pyramids, Wembley Stadium. Yeah, that would be great. Edinburgh. We're trying to get the Phoenix Park in Dublin, which is a bit of a wrestle, but I think we might be able to pull it off. Oh, it'll be so great. The People's Park and all that, you know. It's just great to put on a show like this and to get away with it.
And how much planning is there that goes into it? I mean, and who does it come from, like the visuals? I mean, Adam, you haven't spoken for a very long time.
I'm listening. This is all news to me. Someone mentioned a tour.
What role do you play in the band?
Well, these just bring me along to keep them company.
Adam, you're the fashion guru, aren't you?
No, I don't think so.
Fashion victim.
I like to change a lot. I get bored easily. I turn up on stage and play the bass.
Girls anything love else? The bass. Anything else? Throbbing.
Yeah, they love that. Don't they, Adam?
They do.
I'll revert back to my original question then. Who has all the ideas for the visuals and the just the whole kind of concept for what goes on stage?
It's a democracy. I mean, everyone gets their say and then they do what I say.
Fine. Right, okay. We'll play another record. This is you two. This is one.
Started life as a pub band, winning a Guinness-sponsored talent contest in 1979. They signed to Island Records in 1980 and put out their debut album a year later. Boy was bursting with teen spirit, post-adolescent angst, and songs like The Scarily Totalitarian. The follow-up, 1981's October, was splattered with religious imagery. Typical for a band whose work has often been about the search for God and whose lead singer teeters on that fine line between profit and prat. 1983's War was a real turning point, catapulting them from local core celebre to intercontinental ballistic rock group and featuring some of the most celebrated po-faced dirges. Emotionally charged rock classics, such as this, and this. 1984's The Unforgettable Fire, their second number one LP, spawned this all-time student rabble rouser. But it wasn't until the Joshua Tree that you two really bestrode the globe like unshaven colossi in their 10-gallon hats, searching for the authentic essence of rock in the Mojave Desert as they became the biggest band on the planet. Consumed with doubt and oozing existential ennui, 1988's Rattle and Hum was U2's most hideous attempt yet to invoke the primal, bluesy, soulful urges that first brought rock into being. Guest appearances from B.B. King et al. Acting Baby, their first album of the 90s, saw a radical change, all dark, technological and urban, where previously they were bright, traditional and windswept. Still, their earnestness shone through like rays of quasi-mystical light. Or something. And then they got seriously futuristic with the 21st century rock and roll circus that was Zooropa. Bono reinventing himself on stage as Mac Visto, beaming images of Nazi rallies onto massive screens and ringing local politicians in a bid to create the most subversive multimedia blipvert fest on Earth. 95's Passengers was an artsy-fartsy slice of pseudo-ambient whimsy. But it's the new album Pop that provides the latest installment in U2's progress from mullet-haired Wazzix to Ray Bancroft pioneer surfing the interface between experimental art and accessible pop. Probably.
So do you think that was an accurate representation of your career?
I think I'm going to go home at this point. There's nothing else to say.
What have been the highlights of your career? Larry, what's the...
I don't know. There have been many highlights. You know, there are moments of just knowing that you've done something greater. You know, but it's always been a musical thing as opposed to being in a certain place.
You were saying earlier on about how... always the problem of being in U2 is that you just get to ask like really deep questions all the time.
It's where do you draw the line between being a musician and being a celebrity? And it's a very fine line.
Isn't the fine line between you and Bono?
I'm not a celebrity. You don't find me in Hello magazine.
So they asked you?
Of course they asked me. They offered to pay for my wedding. Our wedding. No, you're married.
Well, I'll take the money, if you will. But you enjoy the whole rock and roll lifestyle.
I'm just better at covering up. I don't enjoy it at all. I mean, you know, when we get offside, that's why we live in Dublin. Just don't want to be part of that, to be honest with you. But, you know, when you've got your wares to sell, your songs and stuff, you got to get out there and shake your booty.
But you must enjoy it to a certain extent.
You better. I mean, I hate whinging pop stars, so it's like, it would be awful to crib about it. And the sort of shy rock and roller thing, I just can't swallow that. You know, it's like, if you're shy, you know, you become a potter or something. You don't join a rock and roll band. So I just don't go for that. How did this happen to me? Oh, you know, one day we were in this little rehearsal room. You know, you make it happen. And I'm very grateful for what's happened to us, you know.
I mean, it is. It has to be said, it's the best job in the world, being in a rock and roll band.
It's not a job. That's what's great about it.
It's the best thing you could do, I think. I mean, I don't think we'd be in the band if we didn't believe that.
What gives you the most satisfaction? What do you particularly enjoy? Is it when you're on stage, or is it when you're, you know, you just listen back to the album and you've just completed it for the first time?
I think the shows are a real thrill, and it actually makes being on the road worthwhile. Seeing Bono out there singing his little heart out, it's just fantastic. And he's so good. No, it is. I mean, honestly, being on the road is like you're in the twilight zone, and weirdly enough, being on stage actually makes the whole thing make sense, because you're in a bubble for a year, you're traveling around, you start to feel very strange after a while, but the shows actually keep you grounded, which is the irony and the weird thing about it. And apart from the shows, I suppose being in the studio, when you crack a great tune and it comes back through those speakers and it sounds amazing.
Thank God I was magnificent in that one.
Yeah, it makes up for all the sort of months of you know, fumbling in the dark, trying to get something together.
If you could give yourself one piece of advice, like, you know, when you very first started out, is there something you would say, Bono, you would say to yourself, blind, why, you know, you shouldn't have done that?
I regret the particularly bad haircut I had in the 80s.
I think I've seen the picture.
Which sort of launched a million second division football players and lots of roadies. But at the time, I thought I looked like David Bowie. And apart from that, I'm very happy with ourselves.
Okay, there are two questions that I want to throw in here because we promised the listeners last week. Katie Cronin from Belfast said, if you can give one piece of advice to any new bands, what would it be?
Write a great song.
Okay, there you go. Katie, there's your answer. Philip Collins in County Durham said, if you had a time machine, which time, which era would you go back to? Bonnet.
Me? I like it right where I am. I think this is the best bit. This is when everything's kind of falling away, and being in a rock and roll band is like, it's like making a movie. You have to be a visual artist, you have to be a songwriter, you have to be a performer, you've got to be an engineer, poet, priest, prat, you know, micro biologist.
And you do most of those things.
You know, it's just, I like it when it's confusing, and it's very confusing to be in a band right now.
Adam, you look confused.
No, I just go forward to a time when there's something for everyone.
Ah, that's such a nice idea.
Future's much more exciting.
Yeah, I think the one thing I'm proud of this band is that we're not nostalgic, you know, and I think everyone is so sort of looking backwards, and as we get to the sort of fag end of the 20th century, I think that's very sad. And
yeah,
it's like the 60s. I'm sick of the 60s. I like the 90s, and I think our music looks, you know, it's looking forward, not looking back.
I think nostalgia is definitely a thing of the past.
Well spotted, that man. Listen, thank you very much for doing this all over again. Did you say that you have confirmed your support acts yet?
We haven't.
Who are you looking at?
There's lots of people, but if we were to tell you...
It would be an exclusive on this show.
It would be an exclusive, and it would probably put the price up. So,
but you just call me, okay, when you know, fine, you do that. Thank you very much for coming in and doing it all again. And this is your chance to play a track that you really, really want to, something that you really, really want.
I think we should play Gavin Friday's Angel. It's on the Romeo and Juliet soundtrack, and he's just great. It's that simple.
He's always been an inspiration.
Yeah, and he also helped us finish our record on time when he came in. He's got great pop ears, and this is a great pop tune. Angel's called.